So today we wrap up this series, Who Needs God? And so if this is your first time here, or if this is your first time watching us online, you know, you're literally coming in at the end of a conversation. And if you've ever come in at the end of a conversation, you may find yourself saying, wait, what are we talking about again? But don't worry. In fact, we've got you covered. If you go online to newlifewichita.com/messages, or if you find us on podcast by simply searching for New Life Wichita, all of our messages for the Who Needs God series, including today's, will be available online. And in fact, if you'd like to catch up with the conversation, you know, I would highly recommend that you go online, catch up with the messages, because it will certainly make today make a lot more sense. In fact, this whole series is just one long sermon spread out over 6 weeks. And so we started light and we're ending heavy. So some time ago, a research group coined the term none, N-O-N-E, to describe a group of people who have stepped away from faith. And they're basically the non-affiliated or the unaffiliated. And in fact, if we want to look at the latest studies, the research has shown that here in the U.S., 33% of Americans would be considered as unaffiliated or non-affiliated. That's people who grew up in the faith and who stepped away from the faith. And if we want to zoom in even more and look at a particular group of people, let's just say the upcoming generation, people like me, young adults, or people that are just now exiting high school and getting ready to go into college. You know, studies have shown that approximately 40 to 50% of high school kids who grew up in the faith will abandon the faith completely by the time they're done with college. Now, that may not seem like much to you, but you know, that's the world to me. Because many of you in this room, you'd probably say, you know what, that was me. Or if you're being really honest with yourself, you're probably still there. You know, you don't know where you land with religion, with Jesus, with faith. Like, what is it that we're doing? What is it that's in store for me? And that's okay. I understand that. You know, because we all struggle with it. And so to be clear, the intent for this series hasn't been to convert atheists. In fact, we're not looking to convert anyone. We just want all of those of you who grew up in the faith and who left the church to come back. So if you grew up in church, specifically a Christian church, we just want you to reconsider faith. In fact, we want you to step back into the faith of your childhood, but not your childhood faith. Essentially, we're inviting you, or this whole series is an invitation to begin your adult journey of faith. And I know this is hard, and you may even say, well, the reason why I left the church was because I asked a real honest question, and they thought I was a heretic, and they laid hands on me, and they started praying for me and trying to cast out demons. And I was just asking an honest question about six-day creation. Next thing I know, I'm cast out. I'm demon-possessed. They can't cast the demons out of me. So I understand that. But here's the thing. Here at our church, you can belong before you believe. In fact, we've designed this whole place with you in mind. Because when Jesus was on this planet, he invited people to follow him who didn't believe. In fact, his followers were worse than any of us. They believed, then they didn't believe, they didn't know what to believe, then they believed, and then they changed the world. So if you've ever believed, stop believing, and you're reconsidering it, you're in. You fit the description of a first century Jesus follower. So as his body, as his people, you know, we can't say you can't belong until you believe. Because if Jesus has started that way, then no one would have followed him. And so it takes time. And we have questions. And there are things that we have to explore. And curiosity is a powerful, powerful thing that I think, in my opinion, God has given us the ability to engage in. So we want to invite you to step back into the pool, to begin following Jesus, not following the church, following Jesus. Understanding that you may not know everything, but then again, none of us will. And I think this is where Amber and I want to spend the rest of our time together as we wrap up this conversation. So for the next few minutes, we just want to challenge those of you who abandoned the church and who left the church to do something that at some point in time we all have to do and in some arena of our life. And that is to be honest with yourself. Now that may come across as insulting, and I don't mean it to be. So just track with us. Maybe this will make a lot more sense as we move along.
Okay, so now you're probably a little scared, thinking, okay, David, you want me to be honest with myself. But what does that have to do with the fact that I've stepped away from faith? Well, I have three quotes and a few questions for you this morning, and that's where the honesty comes in. So three quotes and a few questions, and here is my first quote. There's an academic book called The Last Word by Thomas Nagel. Thomas Nagel's a professor at New York University. He teaches philosophy and law. In this book, he argues that if there is such a thing as reason, it has to be universal. That reason must reflect objective principles that can be validated outside of our point of view, principles that anyone can recognize. And in this book, Thomas Nagel, who's an atheist, he makes an extraordinary confession. His honesty is amazing. And for me, maybe some of you listening or watching here today, his honesty is liberating. And it may reflect something that you have never been willing to admit to yourself before. So here is what he wrote, and listen close, because it doesn't look like it'll be up here. So, I want atheism to be true. And I am made uneasy by the fact that some of the most intelligent and well-informed people I know are religious believers. And I think that's extraordinary for an atheist to say. He goes on, it isn't just that I don't believe in God and naturally hope that I'm right in my belief. It's that I hope there is no God. I don't want there to be a God. I don't want the universe to be like that. Now for me, and for maybe some of you, you may have never given yourself permission to acknowledge this, because you know that if you acknowledge this, you've just cracked open the door to something that is terrifying. In fact, if you crack open the door to this thought, you may not ever close it again, because there is a big difference, and there's an important difference, between I don't believe it and I don't want to believe it. You see, I don't believe it has to do with, well, I used to believe it, but then something happened, and I woke up one day, and I realized I just didn't believe it. Or I believed when I was a child, but then I went to school, and I learned some things that I couldn't reconcile with faith, or I left my little family bubble of religion, and I just don't believe it. That's one thing. I don't want to believe it has to do with will. I don't want to believe it has to do with I don't want to believe it because. I don't believe it because versus I don't want to believe it because. These are two very different things. And as I step into this uncomfortable topic, here's a few questions. Did you lose faith over something that happened to you? Did you lose faith, or did you step back because the information just wasn't there? It was too elementary. You kept getting Sunday school answers to your real-world questions, or maybe like Chad talked about a few weeks ago, you kept getting faith-based answers to fact-based questions. Is that why you stepped away? Or, I'm going to pry just a little bit here. Did you decide to stop believing because faith became inconvenient? But then after you decided to stop believing, maybe you realized, well, stop believing in something isn't an argument. So now I have to go develop some support for my unbelief. In other words, did your decision to stop believing precede the data that you have collected to support your unbelief? Because if the question is, I just don't believe, I used to believe, now I don't, or I'm sort of ambivalent, maybe I've never believed, but I'm curious, well, there's information. There's all sorts of things you can explore. You can get your questions answered. There are all kinds of books that are maybe contrary, perhaps, to what you've always believed. That's one thing. If you want God to exist, then seek answers. You will find answers. But here's the tough one. And here's where I want you to be honest with yourself today. If your departure from faith was around will and want, if your departure from faith was around, I just don't want it to be true, then information will never satisfy you. Blaise Pascal, 17th century French mathematician. He was a physicist and a philosopher. He was a child prodigy. He made some extraordinary statements in his life, and here's one. Listen, listen close. People almost invariably arrive at their beliefs not on the basis of proof, but on the basis of what they find attractive. And are we not all guilty of this? Of course we are. And here's why, because very few of us, maybe none of us, I don't know, you may be the exception, but very few of us are on a truth quest. We don't wake up every day saying, I just want to know the truth, and I'm willing to abandon everything in my life only to know the truth. The majority of us are not on a truth quest, but we are on a happiness quest. I want to be happy. Give me a set of values. Give me a way of thinking that makes me happy. And if that worldview, that set of values doesn't make me happy anymore, then I'll change them. So I'm not on a truth quest. At the end of the day, I just want to be happy. St. Augustine said, we love the truth when it enlightens us. We hate the truth when it convicts us. And you all know this. We all know this. Because all you have to do is think back to when you were arguing with your parents as a kid, right? When you argued with your parents, were you trying to get to the truth? Were you trying to have your way? Were you trying to get to the bottom line? Mom and Dad, let's find truth together. Oh, Dad. Oh, you're right. I apologize. You have enlightened me. We didn't argue with our parents that way. We argued to get our way, not get to the truth. If you've ever had an argument with your husband or your wife halfway through the argument, hey, so what is this? What's this thing in us? I'm in the middle of an argument with David, and I realize halfway through, he's right. But what do? I just keep arguing. Because I'm not trying to get to the truth. Now I want to win the argument. So it's not about right and wrong. It's about win. Then if I win the argument, even if I'm wrong, oh, but then I'm smarter, right? It's like I had a killer one-liner. We're arguing and Judah interrupts and I had the last word. So it's like, gotcha. But when the argument's over, we know we won the argument. But it was never about finding the truth. It was just about winning. And now here's where we need some more honesty. When we are not willing to acknowledge what we suspect to be true, when we won't look for fear of what we might see, do you know what that means? It means there is something else in the mix. It means that all the arguments and all the reasons that we put out there, while they may be true, while they may give us leverage, it means there is more to this conversation that we have been willing to acknowledge. If you are one of those people that when you are being honest with yourself, you just don't want to believe. And maybe you've never been willing to admit this until today. Maybe you're sitting there thinking, you know what, Amber, you're right. I've got all these facts and figures and arguments, and I shut my parents down years ago, and I pulled out of church years ago, and if anybody asks me, I've got like 3 or 4 zingers, and it just shuts them all down. But you know what? You're right. To be honest, I never thought about this before. I just don't want to believe it. But what is it? What is it that causes us not to acknowledge what we suspect to be true? And for any of us, this isn't just for those of you who stepped away from faith. This is a human thing. What is it in us that we won't acknowledge what we expect to be true? Or causes us not to look when we are afraid of what we might see? Today, I'm talking to those of you who may have stepped away from faith, but I think all of us need to know the answer to this question. And so at the risk of ruining this whole series that we've done right here, and at the risk of offending you, which I don't want to do, could it be the real reason that you have stepped away from faith isn't perhaps the reasons that you give? Isn't perhaps you're presenting facts and arguments? Could it be one of these three things? Could it be that if there is God, you are guilty? Could it be things in your past? In some cases, they are so big and they are so bold and they're so embarrassing. And you, even though you don't like to use this word, maybe you've escaped this emotion and this feeling that when you bring those things front and center, you actually feel ashamed. You're actually embarrassed. And you try to keep those things locked away. You've used a label on them. You've used the cultural label. You said, well, in the past, when I was younger, I made some mistakes. But here's what you know. And I just want you to crack the door open on this. Is it possible that you know if I crack the door open on the fact that maybe it is not just mistakes, it's bigger than that, that it moves me and it transitions me to the fact that maybe I have sinned, that it's bigger than I've just made some mistakes. And maybe your biggest mistake is, and you are never alone in these, maybe your biggest mistake is you hurt other people. Maybe your biggest mistake is you owe somebody some apologies. Maybe you owe some things that you can't ever pay back. You can't give her back those first few years. You can't give your kids back whatever it was you took from them because you were doing whatever it was you were doing. And we realize that whatever it is, the residual and the aftermath and the shrapnel, the wake of those decisions, it just follows you around. It just hovers there constantly. And if we crack the door open on the fact that maybe there is a God, then suddenly it just gets bigger. And I'm going to feel something that if we're being honest today, we want to feel. So here's something else that keeps us from not wanting to believe. If God, I'm accountable. And come on, starting with me, we don't want to be accountable. I don't want to be accountable. We all want to play God. It's the story of the Garden of Eden. And you may think it's a myth. You may think it's history. Regardless of what you believe about it, the story of the Garden of Eden explains so much. It is the beginning. It is the initial phase of mankind deciding, God, we do not need you. Who needs God? Not me. Not him. In the Garden of Eden, and now in all of our lives, it plays out with the illusion of autonomy that somehow I will be my own person. I can do what I want to do. I will make my own choices. But this always, always, always leads to regret. Unaccountable people make regretful decisions. Unaccountable. I'll do it my way. Nobody tells me what to do. I can manage the consequences. I can manage the outcome. Unaccountable people always make regretful decisions. So now the problem is, and I get this, that if you begin to admit God, then you have got to submit to God. Because you know if there is a God who's going to hold you accountable, then suddenly you are accountable. And I don't want to submit. You don't want to submit. Nobody in here wants to submit to that. But where did that come from? What is it in you and me that we resist the things that are good for us? But I know this. To admit God means you got to submit to God. And so we live loud, busy lives until life gets our attention and we can avoid our accountability. And so the third thing, and the last thing for me, and I'm going to have David wrap up. Maybe this is you, maybe not. Maybe this is just my thing. If God, I am... If God, I'm wrong. And now come on, just play along with me today. You don't have to do anything. We're not going to have an altar call, and there's not going to be bid for your soul today. Just play along. What is pride? What is that in you and me? You can't deny it. I've never even met you, and I know this about you because you can assume it about me. What is it in us that we won't admit what we know is true? We know in our minds we're wrong, and we know in our hearts we're wrong, and we've got plenty of background, plenty of history to know that we are wrong. But when it comes right down to looking somebody in the eye and saying, I was wrong, what makes that so difficult? You need to have an answer to that question, because that's something that we all deal with all the time. And the problem with acknowledging God is, especially if you've been away for a while, it's like, I was wrong. But humility, and we all know this too, humility is the way forward. Humility, I don't know why we resist it. Humility always makes you bigger. Humility always makes you wiser. Humility makes you open to new information. I've been wrong as the most direct route to discovering what is right, but we resist that. So could it be, if God, I'm guilty, I'm accountable, I'm wrong, and I don't want to be guilty, accountable, or wrong. I just want to stick with my arguments and keep God at bay. But here's the thing. The arguments that you have aren't for or against anything. They are just responses. The resistance that you put out, the resistance and the reluctance to acknowledge God, it's not an argument. It is just a response. It explains why you've developed your arsenal of arguments. Because you are wise enough to know, simply saying, well, I don't want to believe. I don't want to feel guilty. I don't want to be accountable, and I don't want to be wrong, but that's not an argument. So now we have to scramble around and come up with some arguments, because this is simply a response. But for some of you, and if you're honest, what I'm about to say has been true for me too, but you don't have to be honest with me today, just yourself. Isn't it true that your arguments against God came after your decision not to want God? Isn't it true your intellectual arguments against the existence of God or the Bible or whatever else it is, isn't it true that that was not first, that that came second? That after an initial season or period or event where you decided, I don't want God, but not wanting God, it's not an argument. I need some reasons to support my decision. What explains why you've developed your arsenal of arguments? Because you did not want God to be.
By the way, our notes, since they're not on the screen, they're also available on the Bible app. You guys can follow along. We'll also have them available online. So what Amber just said, you know, is so true. And in the end, what it does is it brings us to the good news. And in fact, it's not just good news. It's ridiculously good news. And when you acknowledge that the issue is not God's existence, but my resistance, not God's existence, but my own personal resistance, you step into the middle of an epic narrative. And the epic narrative of God pursuing relationship with the rebel race that broke relationship with God. And I'll tell you why this is great news. Because once you're willing to admit, this isn't about God's existence, it's not about science, but it's about my own personal resistance. And once you're willing to admit that, you step into the stream of humanity that has struggled with submission to God from the very beginning of time. And you are exactly where you need to be. So, because if Jesus was correct about God, if God, then there's forgiveness. That's your rebellion, your sin, your mistakes, you know, whatever you want to call them. That's the platform in which God demonstrates his love for you. In fact, the Apostle Paul said it perfectly, and there's a word in this phrase that we miss sometimes, but it's like this big, big, big word, you know, Romans 5:8. But God demonstrates. He demonstrates. You know, he didn't just say it, he demonstrated. But God demonstrates his love for us in this. While we were still mistakers, you know, while we were still, nobody's perfect in, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. The new atheists, they make a big deal. If there's God, why didn't God just forgive everybody? Why all the blood? Why all the gore? Why did somebody have to die? Why didn't God just say, you know what, you're all forgiven? And here's the answer to that question, because God wanted to enter into a relationship with mankind. You can't have a relationship with someone you're not willing to sacrifice for. If you don't sacrifice for me, how do I know that you love me? And this is so powerful. And this is the gospel. And this is right at the center of everything we believe in as Christians. God demonstrated his love for you. He touched down to enter into a relationship with mankind. And every relationship demands sacrifice. Every offense requires forgiveness. Every offense requires coming back together in restitution. And through Christ, this is why it's the grand narrative. This is why it's the epic story. And this is the stream in which we live and in which we swim. And that is, through Christ, he offers both forgiveness and restitution. Do you really want to live the rest of your life outside of that? Especially if there's something that's just tugging in your heart that's saying, you know what? I think that might be true. And so if there's God, there's relationship. To resist, come on, to resist relationship with God is to resist accountability to God. Parents know this. When their kids act bad and they rebel, what's broken? The relationship is broken. And so if there's God, there's truth. There's a basis for moral law. There's a basis, like we talked about last week, for justice. And this is so huge. If there's God, there's an explanation for the oughts. There's an explanation for the oughts that you embrace, and there's an explanation for the oughts that you don't embrace, that don't govern your actions, but that govern your reactions. Like you shouldn't have treated me that way. Now, I may treat you that way, but you don't treat me. Like, what is that? What is that big, grand ought of how you know people, other people ought to treat you, and you know how you ought to treat them, but you don't even do what you ought to do. But you're quick to be angry when they don't do what they ought to do. Like, what is that? So if God is forgiveness, there's relationship, there is truth. There's morality, there's a basis for justice, there's a basis for the law of nature, the law in your heart that you respond to every single day. If the question was, who wants God? At some point, none of us. But if the question is, who needs God? As it turns out, all of us. Now, you may not know this, but Jesus had brothers and sisters. Yeah, brothers and sisters. In fact, the New Testament gives us some of the names of his brothers. And what's so fascinating and so interesting is that even his own family, Jesus' own family, thought that he was crazy. They thought he was crazy. I guess that's what happens when your brother claims to be the Son of God. And this is all documented, but after the resurrection, they changed their mind. I guess that's what happens when not only you predict your death, but also your resurrection. You change your mind. And so Jesus had a famous brother named James. And so James changes his mind about his brother. And he admits. He acknowledged he was wrong. And this is so powerful. And this is amazing. And James submitted. There's an awful word again. He submitted to his brother as his Lord and as his Savior. And he received forgiveness for his vocal public non-following of his brother Jesus. And in fact, in the year 62, the high priest did an illegal thing. He called together the religious leaders of that time, and he tried James, the brother of Jesus, for heresy. And James was put to death for his faith in his brother. So I'm going to ask Zan to come up, and this is where we want to end this conversation. Before he died, James wrote a letter. And in this letter, he says something I think lands the plane for this entire conversation. And here's what James, the brother of Jesus, who was stoned to death because of his faith in his brother, here's what he says. James chapter 4. Come near to God, and God, he will come near to you. Now, realizing that we don't know what was going through James's mind when he was writing this, but realizing and understanding how difficult it is to acknowledge you're wrong. Remembering and realizing, oh, I remember. I had all those years to support my brother, and I turned my back on him. They would tell me about all these miracles that he did, and I'm like, yeah, that didn't happen. I had all my arguments. And then he realizes this is not an easy thing to do. Come near to God when you have drawn away from God. the next thing he says is, come near to God, and he will come near to you. Wash your hands, you sinners. You know what this means? This is figurative language for admit it. It wasn't just a mistake. You did it on purpose, and you knew there would be a consequence. Wash your hands, you sinners. You knew. And purify your hearts, you double-minded. And what James is saying here is just quit playing games. Come on. Acknowledge what you know is true. Look over there even though you're afraid to. Acknowledge what you know in your heart is true. And then look at the thing you're afraid to look at because of what it might demand of you. Be honest with yourself and don't hide behind the facts. I mean, facts are facts. There's no reason to hide from God about the facts of this world. And then the toughest one of all. And humble yourselves before the Lord. This is how you draw near to God. This is how you draw near to anyone. Humble yourselves before the Lord. And then he tells us how. Regardless of what your circumstance is, where you've been, whether you've left the church, whether you don't know where you stand with faith, religion, or being a follower of Jesus, here is how your Heavenly Father will respond. Humble yourself before the Lord, and He will lift you up. And He will lift you up. Now, I understand that for many of you in this room, this whole conversation maybe has stirred a whole bucket of emotions. Or something in your heart that's pulling in one direction. You really don't know what to do with that. And so if there are people in this room that want to take a step, just take a step, any step, towards Jesus, I just want to let you know that we are here for you. It's okay, you don't have to be nervous. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand or come running to the altar. But if you feel like today is the day that you want to commit to something much greater and better than what you're currently pursuing, I just want to let you know that we are here for you. And I would like to encourage you to come find one of us. You know, Amber and I are going to be available after service, or anyone that's wearing a New Life Wichita shirt. You know, we would love to talk to you about what it is become a follower of Jesus. Just take a step in that direction. As you came in, if you're new, you may have received a welcome card. You could check one of the boxes that says, you know, I want to know more about New Life Wichita, or I want to become a follower of Jesus. You know, I would encourage you to do that too and hand it to one of us. We'd be happy to talk to you about that. And if there's something that you need prayer for, you know, we would like to pray for you about that too. Now, you feel like, you know what, that's great. This information, all this stuff you presented, you know what, I'm still wrestling with that. I think there's some truth to it, but I'm not sure where I land with that. Like, I still need to do my own research and come to my own conclusions. If you're still wrestling with that, you know, that's all right. You know, again, we're not trying to push you into one direction, but we're just trying to invite you. Like we said at the very beginning, you know, we have designed this place with you in mind. You know, where you can come and bring your questions about faith, about religion, about Jesus, New Testament, Old Testament, the Bible. You don't have to believe to belong. We've designed this place where you can belong before you believe. And that's exactly what we do. So we want you to come back. In fact, next week, Pastor Chad's going to be starting a new series on the book of James titled Dirty Faith, where if this is true, if following Jesus is true, what does that look like for me on a day-to-day basis, on a practical basis? And so next week, we'll be starting that. And I would like to invite you to come back, invite a friend. There's some invite cards on the chairs. We'd love to see you here. And so as we get ready to dismiss, I just want to take a moment and pray. Father, this conversation has been hard. It's been challenging. But it's also been so refreshing and enlightening in so many ways. And I pray for those in this room who are getting ready to take a step towards you, who are getting ready to step into something much greater and better than where they're at now. God, I thank you for that. I also pray for those people in this room who are still wrestling with that, not sure where they land with you and faith, or maybe they had some bad experiences in church, bad experience with religion altogether. God, I just pray for them as they continue in their faith journey and their quest for truth. So great. You're so wonderful. And we thank you for forgiveness, for relationship, and for truth. Be with us as we get ready to enjoy the rest of our day and our weekend. Thank you for everything. It's in your Son's name we pray. Amen.